All got labels, some we're given and some we're born with. And next on Radio 4, comedian Imran Yusuf does some soul-searching about what it means to be a man.
He had an innate understanding of how humans work, how their minds work.
Jonathan Miller had a fantastic mind and an extraordinary memory. But all that was stolen from him by Alzheimer's.
Married her?
Yes.
I never married anyone.
You did. You married Mum.
I don't think so.
I'm William Miller, and I'll be learning more about the disease that killed my father, as well as piecing together the story he wanted to pursue about the workings of human memory.
The brain is taking in all this information, but it doesn't need it all. We're constantly shedding information.
Jonathan Miller, Lost Memories, on Saturday night at 8, on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
And here on Radio 4 this evening, we ponder what it means to be a man. Here's Yusuf Imran, relabeled, recorded in front of a live, remote audience.
Hi, my name is...
Greetings, everyone. My name is Imran Yusuf. Welcome to my show about labels. Now, as you know, labels are just words that we use to define things. We've all got them, loads of them. You were labelled before you were born, perhaps as a bun in the oven, or if you were unexpected, an accident. I'm a comedian. That's one of my labels. And by the end of this show, most of you will label me a genius. And some of you, just as interesting, when what you really mean is unfunny. Some labels stick, some peel off. But if you understand your labels, it'll help you navigate the adventure of your life. Me, I'm a Kenyan-born, ethnically Indian, British Muslim. And all those labels help me understand why I attract so much attention at border control. I thought it was because they recognise me, but it's because they don't, and they want to know where I'm going. I'd like to tell them to a gig where I'm going to go blow the roof off. This only makes things worse. But more simply, I'm tall, very handsome, and a man. That's the label I'm talking about today, man. I started out as a boy. Couldn't help it, I was born that way. As a boy, I didn't know any sexism or misogyny, and that's how I grew up to become this hot, sexy dude that all the birds want. I'm all about modern masculinity. I'm not interested in that patriarchy nonsense, no thanks. I understand the importance of respecting women, especially one who might become my wife and make my tea. But before I could become a man, I had to complete the trials of boyhood first, and mine were in the golden era of the 80s and 90s. Back then, binary gender definitions were simply blue or pink. Blue was for boys, probably because it started with the letter B, and pink was for girls because it's rubbish and not as good as blue. Boys played with action figures, cars and dinosaurs. Girls played with dolls and ponies. And later in life, with our hearts. If you watch boys at any school playground, not that I'd recommend it unless you work there, you'll see that lots of boys are hyperactive, snot-nosed liabilities. But on the inside, we know we're really Jedi ninja superheroes. Because we want to be strong. Strength is what males are all about. This is deeply rooted in our DNA from when the first caveman went and smashed another caveman in his face with a rock. Strength equals power. We see this everywhere. Strong men are alpha males, leaders, men who can stand up for themselves and change the world, like Alexander the Great, Genghis Khan or Danny Dyer. Weaker men are beta males, subject to the will of others. They shy away from conflict by hiding in freezers or depending on professional footballers to feed hungry children. I wanted to be a strong man. I wanted to be an alpha male. It was hardwired into me. As a boy, I'd see another boy in the playground and I had to challenge him. Hey, I'll give you a race. That's what boys did. It's how we got bragging rights in the playground, by winning races. If I won, I was the alpha male. If I lost, then I know my place. Even now, grown men, we're so fast, we often come first, and this really upsets women for some reason. I mean, we've worked really hard on ourselves all our lives. Don't know what you're complaining about. You've got to be fast in the playground. It's a core fundamental in the bigger picture of being a boy. If you're fast in the playground, then you're good at playing had. You can catch someone else and make them it. Then if you become it, you've got the lurgies and no one wants to play with you or be your friend. Life is hard, kiddo. Get fast or die crying. If you're good at had, then you'll be valuable in the mighty crucible of football. Score goals, become a hero. Except when we went home with torn trousers and scabby knees from skidding on the concrete. Ripped kneecaps were a badge of honour for boys, but a headache for our mums who had to sew up our trousers. See, women of my mum's generation could sew because back then girls were forced to do home economics. Obviously, men weren't allowed, or we'd all just become fabulous drag queens. Which is yet another thing men are better at. Now, this all might sound a bit like a childhood that incubated toxic masculinity. But in fact, football in the playground was actually very inclusive. Anyone was welcome to play, even girls. No one was excluded. If you were rubbish, you went in defence. If you were fat, you went in goal. Those are the rules. The bigger you are, the more surface area you have to stop the ball. That's not bullying, that's just physics. Sometimes fights break out. The bigger you are, the better. But for those of us who were skinny, we had to pretend we knew kung fu. If you held the crane kick pose from the Karate Kid and went, you could hold off throngs of angry boys for the whole of playtime. Or, if you were Chinese, no one would mess with you. We've all seen their films, we're not taking any chances. I think you'll find this is a positive prejudice. But every fight always ended the same way for boys. And that was running off crying into the arms of the welfare lady like a big sissy. I wanted to learn kung fu. And so I did what most boys do and learnt it off films from the video shop down the road. I was 8 years old when I discovered Jackie Chan in my favourite film of his, The Armour of God. In The Armour of God, Jackie Chan plays a treasure hunter who has to rescue his successful pretty boy cousin played by the famous Cantonese pop star Alan Tam, all whilst travelling the world beating up bad guys, which, by the way, is the best job in the world. In all his movies, Jackie Chan would always be outnumbered and outgunned, always the underdog, yet he'd persevere to protect his friends and uphold justice because he always fought with heart. And in the 80s English dub of The Armour of God, Jackie Chan said this line that changed my life. When I was a kid, I dreamt of being a hero, saving people and doing good deeds. And in that moment, I knew who I wanted to be. Being a hero, saving people, doing good deeds is exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted to be Jackie Chan. That's when I was 8 years old. And now here at 41, I'm still not Chinese. People keep messing with me. There's not much positive prejudice I get to work with nowadays. Sure, in an emergency situation, I could pretend I'm a doctor and you'd trust me, but for some reason, never a pilot. The playground is where boyhood power really emerges, but too much power can turn some boys into bullies. At our school, there was Lenny. He'd been bullied by another boy who was bigger than him. Lenny goes home, tells his father about the bully, and his father says that he'll sort him out. I was like, yeah, Lenny's father is going to go beat up the bully. That'll teach him. That weekend, Lenny's father takes him to the bully's house and knocks on the door. The bully's father answers. The bully's watching from the corridor. Wicked! Lenny's father is going to tell the bully's father about his son being a bully. Instead, Lenny's father smiles and asks the bully's father if his son would like to join them at the fun fair. The boy's father looks to his son and asks him if he'd like to go. The boy nods and joins Lenny and his father. They spend the whole afternoon together. They have a great time at the fun fair. They go on all the rides, the Helter Skelter, the carousel, and the Ferris wheel. They eat candy floss and ice cream. They had loads of fun together. Lenny, the boy, and Lenny's father. And no one mentions the bullying at all. Afterwards, they all go home. The next day at school, the bullying has stopped. Lenny was telling us this now, but Lenny wasn't young anymore. Lenny was much older when he told us this story. And we didn't call him Lenny. We didn't even call him Leonard. We called him Mr. Gray, because he was actually our head teacher. And now he was teaching us, especially the boys, how his father had taught him to deal with bullies, that we could resolve conflict without violence and conquer cruelty with kindness. Maybe this could even help us with international conflicts today, although you can try to offer an ice cream to a member of ISIS. but in the sweltering heat of a Middle Eastern war zone, a bushy beard and frozen dairy is just a recipe for disaster. Death to the West! How many more ice creams are left? Only one cornetto. Give it to me! So, primary school had shaped me into a footballer kung fu ninja, ready to solve conflicts with days out to the funfair. And now I'm ready to be a teenager, which came with new challenges. Puberty had decided to give me a squeaky voice, bum fluff, and an affinity with Lynx Africa to help me win over the girls. It's frightening, by the way, just if you, you know, if you're, well, we've all been through puberty. If there's anybody who's listening to this who's not been through puberty, look, stuff is going to start growing out of places, and you just got to just don't take pictures. Don't do that. Eventually, you're going to have to kind of deal with it and shorten it, you know, because otherwise, unless you're into that kind of thing, but that's not something I want you to think about if you're under 18 right now. You know, your voice changes and all of that. And yeah, it's like being a Pokemon. You just evolve and it's just hair. There's no wings. There's no lasers. I still love Nintendo in cartoons, but girls were now very much on my radar, even though they couldn't see me on theirs, no matter how much I tried to tell them how the Super Nintendo was technically superior to the Sega Mega Drive, thanks to its ability to display 256 colours from a palette of 32,000, rotate and scale sprites, and had more buttons. I mean, what more could a girl want? By the way, playground fights evolved in our teens. Boys now got into disgusting cussing matches, trying to win over audiences with creative sexual insults about each other's mums. And in order to win, you had to be dirty, disrespectful, and very undignified. And that's why I was really good at it. I was good at cussing, but I wasn't so good at fighting off after-school muggers. I was skinny and had no muscle, nor the confidence to defend myself or the tiny budget I'd save for the arcades. So I armed myself with a Gat gun. I got it from a friend who had connections to the military, in that his dad was in the military, and often left an assortment of weapons around the house. Thankfully, I never had to use that gun, because by now I'd watched so many Jackie Chan films and played so much Street Fighter 2, I took up Shotokan Karate. Me and my Indian Hindu friend Sham went to learn a Japanese martial art from a British-Ukrainian man named Sensei Eric. Sensei Eric told us it didn't matter what our colour, culture or religion was, but if we worked hard, we could achieve anything. He cared for his students and it showed. He was teaching us more than blocks, punches and kicks. He was teaching us self-empowerment. For a scrawny kid who was struggling at school, acknowledgement from a tough man with a kind heart made me feel like I had a place in his dojo. I was undisciplined at school, but disciplined at karate because I respected my sensei and I wanted to win his approval. I even entered a karate competition and got disqualified for using full contact punches in a semi-contact competition, which at least is better than losing. No one would ever be able to say they beat me up. I'd been removed from the competition for being way too dangerous. Now, with this kind of killer instinct, I'd become a force to be reckoned with, and it would show up elsewhere in my life, perhaps even improve my grades. So, after somehow failing all of my GCSEs, I was way too frightened to go home that day. So I went and sat in a tree, because as far as I was concerned, that's where I was going to have to live when my family saw my results. My parents had come to England after the expulsion of Asians from Uganda. Kids get expelled for doing badly, but if you're a minority and do too well, you might get asked to leave a whole country. My grandparents had left India for East Africa before that, and I was the first in many generations to have been born into much better circumstances so I could become anything my parents wanted me to be, at least. Like a doctor and married by the time I was 18. Okay, that bit's not true. I was 22 when my mum tried to put a double bed in my room and get me a wife. I'd failed in school. I was a failure. So what can a boy who has failed do? Man up. This is a useful phrase for men to maximise our resourcefulness and continue to aspire to become better. And to sometimes neglect our feelings in case we start fawning over chihuahuas and handbags like women do. I'd failed hard, really hard. So I made a promise to myself that I'd become better now as I started to become a young man. And that's when I went to college to do a GNVQ. That's right, a General National Vocational Qualification. Turns out, in the professional world, GNVQ stood for Got No Value for Qualifications. But it didn't matter. College had helped shape me from the academic shambles of secondary school to someone who could now tell the difference between there, and there. Grammatical skills that have helped me write this show, but not that you can tell on radio. I wanted to go out into the world and claim my dream. I wanted to make video games. I was in control of my own destiny now, like a man should be. So I did the manly thing and wrote to games companies, begging to make their tea and have them exploit me in any way they pleased in return for a job. The next thing I know, I got a job as a video games analyst. I was working under a celebrity producer who immediately put my irrepressible enthusiasm for video games to good use by asking me to do all the things that he didn't want to do. I rapidly learnt the inner workings of a major video games publisher, and I started making loads of money and felt manlier than ever before. I'd fancied myself as a stand-up comedian ever since my late teens, so I took a sabbatical from games. My role as the office joker was wearing thin anyway. Anecdotes about how men and women are different weren't being appreciated at work. Turns out HR don't think sexism is funny. But what does she know? She's only a secretary. I was off to become rich and famous. A year later, I was broke. I ended up testing games on minimum wage and working on rolling contracts that never got renewed. But I just kept turning up and they just kept paying me. See? HR. She's bloody useless. Now I'm poor and depressed. I've fallen from a great height, and to make matters worse, I was in my mid-20s and still single, longing for a girlfriend. Because, to put it bluntly, males admire females, compelled by the biological imperative to procreate, but also just to look at and go, phew, I would. I was just another male participant in the grand dance of two cosmic energies in this never-ending and forever-evolving kaleidoscope of life. In most, but not all, examples on Earth, males dominate through sheer power, battling other males for significance and to win females. Of course, some species have matriarchal societies, but the movie was still called Lion King, though, innit? Hakuna Matata, bitches, get your own film. Many of my friends had girlfriends, and I wanted one too, but they still seemed to elude me, and I didn't know why. Then one day at work, I saw her. She was a few years older than me, which later became a bit of a thing, but that's for another show. She was in management, on a permanent contract, a real salary, even celebrated in the industry as one to watch. I, on the other hand, was a lowly games tester on a rolling contract and minimum wage. But I was a specialist in PlayStation 2 technical requirement criteria, which earned me £1 more an hour. So, you know, I had a chance. He was a skater boy. She said, see you later, boy. He wasn't good enough for her. My knowledge of video games never got me a girlfriend in my teens, so how was my expertise in 8 MB memory card functionality going to do the trick now? It's difficult to be confident with women if men don't know what women want. What do women want? Well, let me mansplain. If a man opens a door for a woman, it could be considered a polite, gentlemanly gesture. But it also can be considered an insult, ever since women's suffrage had fought for the rights of women to open their own doors, but never the lids of tightly sealed jam jars. See, that's a secret safeguarded by the patriarchy. Should the feminist revolution ever happen, men will still be useful for something. But now, young men of my era were in a Schrödinger experiment. Our efforts to woo women held a mysterious quantum superposition of being both chivalrous and or chauvinistic, up until a female observer decides how she feels about it. This kind of jeopardy makes men afraid of offending women, mainly because we'll never hear the end of it. A few years ago, I was travelling with a female comedian, or a comedian who happens to be a female, to some gigs in Norway. We both had small suitcases. She was wheeling hers behind her. I was carrying mine because I'm a man. We were at Oslo train station and had to go down the stairs, where I immediately and without thinking grabbed her suitcase and carried both of our luggage down the very steep steps. She didn't say a thing. Only halfway down did I realise what I had done. I stopped, apologised, and asked for her forgiveness. She was like, "What are you talking about?" I explained that I'd taken her suitcase because my inherently sexist man brain assumed I should alleviate her of this burden because she must be weaker than me, and that I'd robbed her of the agency and dignity of carrying her suitcase herself. And she went, "Oh no, it's fine. I think you've actually been very chivalrous." And I had to march her back up those stairs. Stop being such a woman and carry your own bag like a man. See, I understand feminism. But back to the bird in the games industry. How was I, with the little that I had, going to catch the attention of such a high-caliber woman? I grew up being taught that looks weren't important, that it didn't matter what you looked like on the outside, it only mattered who you were on the inside. This was good news for me, because back then I had a big broken nose and very wonky teeth. So just wait until she cops a load of this overcompensating personality. Looks not mattering sounds good, but actually it's a crock of old bollocks made to make Mingus feel like we have a chance. The truth was that the gulf between a woman like her and a man like me was huge, because the massive difference between what we had made of ourselves. And in this moment of clarity, I realised that if I wanted a chance with a high-calibre woman, I had to become a high-calibre man. There's so much men can learn just by observing successful women, especially if they're attractive, otherwise it's just not worth getting out of bed. I looked at examples of successful men I admired, particularly the underdogs who'd earned their success, like Jackie Chan, who age 7 had been contractually given away to a Chinese opera academy for 10 years by his own parents. Seems that the modern child labour laws of Britain had stifled my potential as a kung fu hero. Jackie Chan left that opera academy aged 17 with a big broken nose too, and ended up a struggling stuntman in other people's movies. He even dated a girl out of his league. She was pretty, came from a wealthy family, and had amazing prospects ahead of her. When her father discovered she was dating a poor, unsightly stuntman, he forbid her from seeing him. And so Jackie Chan walked away, feeling that he'll never be good enough. A decade or so later, he was the biggest star in Asia and became wealthy and powerful beyond his own imagination. And years after that, he discovered that his childhood sweetheart had ended up alone, making a modest living by running a small shop. When Jackie Chan learnt this about her, he ordered his staff to go into her small shop and buy every single item until nothing was left. Such was his wealth. Such was his gift to her. And perhaps one day too, I will follow suit and make a generous gesture to all the girls who I never had a chance with. Although, I've noticed that Natalie Portman has done quite well for herself, so I'll probably leave that one being. So, I spent years working on myself, improving my skills and setting lofty goals all over again, but now with the experience of past failures to help me. I soon realised women like it when a man tries to improve himself, take better care of himself, be polite and welcoming, and at least pretend to listen. It didn't matter if he didn't have a lot of money, we just had to be dedicated to becoming better men. So towards the late noughties, I did eventually climb out of debt, fix my tragic credit score, and even got better at stand-up. Honest. This is actually what I'd listened to when I was on my way to a gig in those early days of being an open spot, reminding me to dig deep and seize the moment, and thus my destiny. Eventually, I got a nomination at the Edinburgh Festival, got to travel around the world to various comedy festivals, appeared on Michael McIntyre's Comedy Roadshow, and even got a part in the Disney film Aladdin. If you check the deleted scenes. But despite this modest fame, I never saw that woman again. She never knew who I was or who I became. Maybe she doesn't have a Disney Plus subscription. Maybe she doesn't even like comedy, or just not woke enough for Radio 4. In fact, none of these successes snared me a girlfriend in the end. Was I still not man enough? Today, masculinity, the patriarchy, male privilege, and gender definitions are potent topics like never before. What it means to be a man to me may not be the same for another man, but the prevailing culture around manhood remains. Men are strong. We define the world through force and organisation, and it's not been pretty, but it's why we have smartphones that we can't live without, so stop complaining, which you can also do on the internet. So again, you're welcome. Men possess testosterone, and a lot of it. Apparently, it helps make us aggressive and increases our car insurance premiums. We don't get pregnant or pout in selfies to express our self-empowerment. No, we kill saber-toothed tigers and get paid enormous amounts to mysteriously fall over and cry in the penalty area. Right now, as a young-ish middle-aged man, which, by the way, is officially a thing now. Sure, I'm middle-aged at 41, but I'm not old. I'm a new middle-aged man, thus a young middle-aged man. I might be too old to be down with the kids these days, and I'm too young to worry about the onset of death, but I'm just the right age to reminisce about the simpler world of four TV channels and when Netflix was literally a shop you could borrow kung fu films from. I look back on what I've learnt about the prevailing culture around manhood. A strong man can do a lot of good for himself and for others, but also a lot of bad if he gets out of control. Luckily, women possess boobs. The kryptonite of heterosexual men. Boobs, they feed babies, which is good, but not in public. You might upset Nigel Farage. But okay on page 3 of a tabloid or a website dedicated to nudity. Such is the power of unclothed women that the strongest men can be knocked senseless. Male and female are opposite but equal forces of nature. But something went wrong and masculinity became way too powerful. Some men abuse their strength. And when that happens, it might yield a short-term win, like a trophy wife and a one-term presidency. So how do we combat this kind of toxic masculinity? Maybe by electing a nice woman who knows how to prevent a pandemic by following the science. See, they're good at running society. Let them do it so we can sit at home and watch the football. Anyway, I'd been single for a bit too long, so I focused on myself for a few years before finally being pushed onto a dating app by a friend. It turned out that another one of my labels became a significant factor on the mainstream dating apps. Although I found plenty of women seeking a man, not many were specifically keen on a Muslim man in case they fell in love with me, were forced to convert to Islam and become one of my four wives who'd have to manage the countless concubines of my harem. I found that because of this, most women would look at my profile but never actually talk to me. So I deleted them all and vowed that I deserved better. This monumental psychological and emotional shift in me reverberated right across the universe in an instant. And to cut a long story short, it's why now my girlfriend is a barrister who is 7 years younger than me. I know, right? She is a very lucky girl. Now, here I am today, not so young and sort of middle-aged. I started my life being born a boy and eventually I became a man. That's how that works. I never became Jackie Chan, but I realised that I might still become someone else's Imran Yusuf. Other men had inspired me to become who I became, and perhaps I too can set enough of a good example as a man to inspire the next generation of boys. And after I pass away from this world, over time, my life might become the stuff of legends, and the old men of the future will regale the youth with stories of how I was the fastest in all the land, immune to the dreaded mysterious illness known as Lurgy, or how many goals I would score with torn knees against an obese goalkeeper who had been cursed to stand on one end of the playground as a mere shield, whilst fighting off boys with a kung fu pose, and yet somehow having romanced all of their mothers. Of course, we all know the truth. But legends about men transform over time, and God forbid someone misconstrue what I said and did with my life and try to blow up an airplane. In which case, let it be known I said, don't do it. Just challenge other boys to races, play football, watch Jackie Chan films, and enjoy video games. Especially on the Super Nintendo. Thank you and good night. Hi, my name is...